And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5, as they have just been telling you. And now it's time to move to a topic which is very timely and important. That is Rwanda. And we're going to talk to Ann Garrison. Are you there, Ann?
I'm here.
Well, thanks an awful lot for joining us. The International Women's Network for Democracy and Peace has named you as the winner of an award in the name of Victoire Ingabire. I guess it's called the Victoire Ingabire Prize. This is, and we followed the subject of Victoire Ingabire. And by the way, I think I'm really glad they chose you because you've been doing singular work. Others, once in a while, there is references to Victoire Ingabire, but I don't think, unless they're following your writing, I don't think they have a clear picture of what this issue is of the woman who's imprisoned in Rwanda and what she represents. Let's begin, if you could tell us, how did you get to learn of her issue and who she was and that sort of thing, and what moved you to decide to write about Victoire Ingabire?
I had been interested in mining aggression, and that inevitably led me to study the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and I knew that Rwanda and Uganda were aggressors there, that they had been the aggressors in both Congo wars and in an ongoing occupation.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know much about Rwanda, besides what we all had been told about the Rwanda genocide. I started to take an interest in it because I am a member of the U.S. Green Party. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, someone contacted me and asked, could I try to figure out what's going on in the Rwandan presidential election? Because there was a Rwandan Green Party trying to enter it. And every time they tried to have the convention they needed to have to be able to register their party, goons came in and busted it up. People got scared and ran away. And then they would make their way through a Kafka-esque maze of bureaucracy, trying to get permission to do it again. They were never able to register. I got in touch with the candidate, the president of the Rwandan Green Party, who was also president of the African Greens Federation, and he gave me the number for the other two viable candidates who were also trying to enter the race that year. They were Bernard Ntaganda, who is now in prison, and Victoire Ingabire Mohosa.
Ah.
They both went to prison that year. Neither of them were allowed to register their party or run for president. And the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda suffered the loss of its vice president, who was found beheaded by the bank of a river in southern Rwanda before it was over. My feeling at the time was that Frank Habineza was too visible a character to have been the target of an assassination plot like that, because he was on the Global Greens Coordinating Committee. Mm-hmm. And the fact that a Green Party was involved actually drew my attention and a lot more international attention, because it's the largest international party in the world.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I talked to Victoire, I was fond of all three of these candidates. I didn't have time to talk to Bernard much, but when I talked to Victoire, I realized that her struggle was particularly unique, particularly comprehensible to the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
and of enormous importance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept calling her. She had been forbidden to speak to the press or to leave the city of Kigali to speak to the majority rural Rwandans whom she was speaking for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started calling her on Skype and on the phone and putting her voice on KPFA. Then I put it on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started fighting for the Google search headlines. I think about this, how to strategize the new media to make your story visible, make sure that it's found by people who are searching on the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And then the president of Rwanda and a lot of his admirers got very upset with me and started denouncing me, along with you and Ed Herman and Robin Philpott, everybody else we know, the ICTR defense lawyers, in the state newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's very striking that, of course, they were engaged in discussing the events of April 1994 and what led up to it. And for all of us, Victoria Ingabire was someone who we admired, but we knew very little about. It was rather interesting story that she came just as a well-spoken individual, and with a background with the association with the Green Party in Europe, and then she articulated a democratic program, and she said, if we have a proper democracy in a parliament, then I want to register a party and see what happens. And
wait a second. Victoria Ingabire is not a Green. Her party is the FDU and Kingi Party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, yeah, I didn't realize. But so she had no association with the Greens of Europe.
The fact that there was a Green in the race, Frank Habineza, mm-hmm. drew a lot more attention to the whole presidential election that year, which revealed what the Rwandan regime was really about. Mm-hmm. I think until that election year, people were believing the whole myth about the development miracle, the end of ethnicity, when we know the story about the end of ethnicity could not be more untrue, because Rwanda is a ruthless Tutsi dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hesitating about the Green issue because that's a little problematic right now. Frank Habineza has gone back.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, he and his party have issued a statement which looks like complete capitulation to the RPF story about mm-hmm. the Rwandan genocide and the RPF agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very sad about that. I like Frank. I like his family. When I report on anybody in Rwanda, I'm concerned about what the impact on them might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what kind of pressure he's under to have finally come out with a statement like this, which is much more harsh than anything he said before. It buys into President Kagame's recent statement that everyone who is in the government between independence, which was 1962, and mm-hmm. 1994, should apologize.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a story, which is, sometimes when I hear these reports, it's almost, I can't believe my ears or eyes. I mean, that is that he apparently told children, young people, that they should, if they're Hutus, they should apologize to Tutsis. Peculiar. By the way, I mean, this is very special psychological issue there. There is such a division of opinion amongst his former colleagues, and so many have now simply, you know, taken the opportunity to get out of there because they feel that this approach that he is insisting on is going to be destructive of everybody. We've spoken, of course, people like Mr. Rudasingwa and others. I wonder how you're following, of course, the news. His government is having difficulties with the South African government right now, and there are other states in the region also very displeased with the leadership in Kigali. And I just wonder does the topic or the issue of multi-partism, or the right to people to have organized opposition parties, and the personality of Victoire Ingabire enter into this discussion about the problems that other states are having with Paul Kagame?
I don't hear a lot of discussion of Victoire's particular case. Once in a while, I've seen it mentioned in the South African press,
mm-hmm.
and just as an aside, I want to say I've also done some reporting on South Africa to help people here, for instance, understand the significance of the Marikana mining massacre. But South Africa has a real press, and Uganda, Rwanda's neighbor to the north, Uganda, which has been its collaborator in the exploitation of the Congo, has much more of a live civil society and a better newspaper, the Uganda Monitor, than any I can name in the U.S. There's no, at least in the English language, there's no real press left in Rwanda that I know of.
Well, no, as indeed we've had the murders of editors during the last election, or what they called an election. As you mentioned, there were people who ended up, who were associated with newspapers, who ended up dead. And some who were only, I guess, bloggers, people who had, who just were on the internet. Now,
there was at least one journalist dead, two journalists in prison, and two more that I know had fled to Uganda and were awaiting political asylum from the UNHCR by the time that election year was over.
We're speaking to Anne Garrison, the International Women's Network for Democracy and Peace is named Anne as Victoire Ingabire Prize for her journalism on the issue of the of Victoire Ingabire, who was imprisoned, and I forget how many years.
15 years.
15 years. I think the trial lasted a matter of days. It was a very intimidating court situation. The site, by the way, is rifdp-iwndp.org. If you where you can see the story of the award and some of the background. We should mention that Amnesty and Human Rights Watch have taken up her case, but only, I guess, nominally. They have said that the trial was improper and that she should be released and there should be international support. Am I right?
Yes, and so has the European Parliament. And I think that's because of Victoire's 16-year residency in the Netherlands. She speaks both Dutch and French fluently. And I think it was pressure from the Dutch in the European Parliament that led to that resolution. It was just ignored.
Well, certainly when this issue began, it was assumed that the Dutch were going to be a sort of a presence, particularly when she ran into legal difficulties and there was talk of imprisoning her. But at this stage, it really is a work like yours and that of the International Women's Network for Democracy that has kept this issue of Victoire Ingabire's incarceration in front of the world. I mean, the Dutch have said something, the European Parliament, but it takes revisiting it on a regular basis. Otherwise, these things, diplomats seem to forget about these things.
Well, one thing I've realized as this has gone along, and I've observed what it takes to interest anyone in this distant story. For me, it's halfway around the world, and one thing that still amazes me about this is that I won this prize for reporting on this from California. And that's a new media story. It's about what is possible on the World Wide Web, where it's now possible to rapidly read all the newspapers in Africa that are covering something like this, and then to read background documents like the UN reports, Global Witness reports, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International reports, then to see on the web what Congress is saying, what the U.S. Congress is saying about this, et cetera. But, of course, the press was being so tightly controlled, is so tightly controlled, in Rwanda, that it was only someone from outside who was doing something like this who was going to be able to do it.
Yes.
And there's one other thing I've found with Rwandans when I've put Rwandans on the air, and I've sort of talked to them beforehand to see what we could say that is the audience here is going to comprehend. Sometimes they don't know how little context people here have, and if if I don't help with that and getting to what's most essential about the story to be understood here, they might bury people in the details. And that's true also of the ICTR lawyers who are up to their ears in their evidence.
Yes.
And of course, you know, have been some of the most valiant opponents of the lie that we're trying to resist here and that Victoria resisted so courageously, the lie about what the Rwandan genocide really was.
Yes.
Indeed,
I was just going to say that there was an assumption about a conspiracy and a carefully pre-planned genocide. That was the story in going into the beginning of this tribunal. Well, then, of course, now the tribunal has gone through all the various accused. There was the government one case. That would be all the key government accused. And then there's the government two. And then there was all the military people, and they did not convict anyone of conspiracy. And when I was originally connected with it, they were going to show that Habyarimana himself was somehow behind it, and all that has disappeared. All that whole theory has disappeared. And we have someone like Carla Del Ponte, who was at one point the lead prosecutor, one of the most glamorous worldwide known prosecutors. She wrote a book, and she said, this entire process is a failure if we don't bring to book those on the RPF side who committed crimes against humanity. And now it's over, and it didn't happen. But we can't get people to go back to square one and say, you remember where this story started?
Well, I have been working towards the simplest explanation of why people should care,
mm-hmm.
because I find even when I've been talking about this on KPFA, I meet a lot of people who've heard these reports and cannot make a lot of sense of them because there's so little context. So whenever I have a chance, which is not the case in a news report, because in a news report you have to report something that's happening now, but when I have a chance like this or, you know, a long format talk show, I'll start by saying, we have all been lied to about the Rwanda genocide.
Mm-hmm.
The Wikipedia story that all the big international press regurgitate, mm-hmm. that extremist Hutus killed 800,000 to a million people, mostly Tutus, in 100 days' time, is a big lie, and it's counter to all the most basic evidence and historical facts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, why does the press keep reporting it? That's, you know, I ask myself, how much of that is laziness because they just refer to the Wikipedia, and there's it seems that a standard sentence in, like, the AP and Reuters seem to have templates that they update to report on a place like Rwanda, and that paragraph about the extremist Hutus killing a million Tutsis in 100 days' time is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when people reported on Victoire, this was amazing. When people reported on Victoire, they would report that she was on trial for saying that there were Hutu victims and Hutu victims needed to be commemorated.
Yes, that is what she said. Yeah,
yeah, and that there were before, during, and after what we know as the Rwandan genocide, Hutu people were also killed, and there were extremists on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would report that, and then they would come down to the end of an AP or Reuters story, and they would paste in the template that says, the Rwanda genocide happened in 1994 when extremist Hutus killed a million Tutsis
mm-hmm.
in 100 days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in the 100 days, like, Americans don't have a lot of context. They have very little context for what is called the Rwandan Civil War, and even that's a misnomer. But they don't know that what we've been told was the Rwanda genocide was the end of a 4-year war.
Indeed,
yeah. Or a 4-year invasion. It began as an invasion from Uganda.
Yes,
that's why the Rwandan Civil War is not really, you know, isn't it? Not, but even if people understood that this was really the end of a four-year war, and there were massacres of Hutu people earlier at the beginning of the war.
Well, yes.
And up until that time.
And in neighboring Burundi, which is also forgotten, that those two republics, which are so close to each other and have exactly the same demographics, had been experiencing massacres for a period throughout the period of ending colonialism, and but as you say, I mean, of course, we're in this the world of sound bites. But if people are interested, at least now there are some things on the record, which and there were courtroom settlements. That is, somebody made an accusation and they either proved it or didn't prove it. But it is, it's very striking. And part of the tragedy is, as you point out, not only do they not know, but even in the cases where, for example, accused persons have been acquitted, they're not freed, they remain in prison, and they're not allowed to return to the countries where they were living as refugees, because the mindset is so solid. And I think we have to thank Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, the prime figures who have been propping up a regime and a narrative which suits them.
And now France, which rejected the story for so many years until Sarkozy capitulated, mm-hmm. realizing that he had to go along with the story if he wanted his share of France's share of the wealth of the Congo. And now we have had this trial, mm-hmm. this big show trial in France, which was obviously mm-hmm. the indictment and the prosecution were obviously about making it clear to the U.S. that France was fully on board with their version of this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a very peculiar moment, because at the very almost the same coincidentally in Canada, the second person accused of genocide here was acquitted, and it's almost like the Canadian courts. I doubt that we're going to go through this again, because actually, even the prosecutor in the case was unhappy with the way that the story was configured. He and wondered about how they proceeded. We're speaking to Ann Garrison. This is the Taylor Report, by the way, CIUT at 9.5 FM. And I think the best thing I should say is you just Google Ann Garrison and you get all the stories that we've been alluding to here. And someone else who was also named, I think a previous award, was Luc Marchal. That's pretty interesting company. Colonel Luc Marchal was the second most important military man in Kigali in April 1994, when all these awful things happened. And he was a recipient of this award, which supports, of course, Ingabire's call that let us recognize the Hutus who lost their lives there in the tens of thousands.
And he marches, when there are marches to free Victoria Ingabire and all the Rwandan political prisoners in Europe, mm-hmm. he marches with them. I'm hugely honored to be in company with
That's pretty good. That's pretty good company.
It's great company. It's great company. I feel like I have to earn it. And on video Skype, when I accepted the award, I even promised to learn to speak French by this time next year, because if I'm going to be in the company of Luc Marchal, I have to be able to read his book, and it's not been translated into English.
Well, that's a very good. I'm really glad you raised that point, because it's a very strange thing. But we have in Canada, of course, the reality we call the two solitudes, where one group speaks French, the other speaks English. Now, one of the problems is that people who participated there, many of those who have written their experience, and Luc Marchal is a very eloquent man, a very thoughtful man, besides being an army officer. And he told this story, but it is not read in Canada, except in French Canada, where they can read him. So you'll be the first one in Berkeley who reads him, I can guarantee you.
Well, before I know we're running out of time, and I want to get to there's one sentence I wrote to summarize what's most important about this, which I still haven't gotten to. That's the problem, getting buried in the details. But, okay, the lie about the Rwandan genocide covers up a monstrous truth about U.S. Pentagon machinations behind the death of perhaps 8 or 10 million African people in the Great Lakes region of Africa, and it's ongoing. That's why you should care. That's why.
Excellent. I'm really glad you say that, and I can repeat something I heard from Philip Renschens, who is considered in Europe the best known authority on Rwanda. I heard a prosecutor say to him, and then what happened after the end of the genocide, and he said, "Mr. Prosecutor, the genocide did not end in July 1994. It simply continued under a new government." I didn't see anybody run and write that down and share it with the world. Ann Garrison, you're doing great work. You really deserve that prize. It's wonderful talking to you, and we look forward to your reporting about Ingabire in the future.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Ann Garrison. And the way to do that is go to Ann Garrison. And I don't have to tell you. You Google the darn thing, and you know faster than I do. I'd be going through my notebooks, and you will have looked it up already. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, Taylor, at CIUT.fm. You can check us out on the web, taylor-report.com. And what do you know? I'm remembering. We're on Facebook. And if I say Taylor Report, Facebook, CIUT, I'm sure you'll get there. Well, we really appreciated having Murray Dobbin and Ann Garrison, and we'll be with you next week.